WikiLeaks superstar. Do you think you're what they say you are? WikiLeaks superstar. Do you think you're what they say you are?
It's showtime with Ricky Lee. Thank you for joining me here on 101.5 Huntley Community Radio. And remember, you can always stream our shows at huntleyradio.com. The Chicago Bulls are one of the most beloved and storied franchises in professional basketball history. The man known as the original Bull was Jerry Sloan. Sloan was a two-time NBA All-Star and then went on to a glorious coaching career with the Bulls and the Utah Jazz. Joining me today is Jerry's daughter, Holly Sloan, to talk about what it was like growing up an NBA kid and what her dad was like. Thank you so much for joining us, Holly.
Hi, Ricky. Thanks for having me.
Now, I did not arrive in Chicago until the mid-90s. So my recollection of Jerry Sloan, your father, was as the coach of the Utah Jazz.
Yeah.
But, you know, for the rest of Chicago, he was the original Bull player, you know, and defined the franchise. For you as his daughter, at what point in his career playing, coaching, when do your memories start of being an NBA kid?
Oh, I honestly, I can remember being a child waiting for him outside, the players. They called it Gate 3.5.
Okay.
At Chicago Stadium. And they always, you know, that's where Elvis would come in and enter the building and leave. And it's where, you know, whenever there was a concert or anything, it was the players' entrance. Or I guess you might call it the entertainment, you know, entrance. So we used to sit there and wait for him to come out. Sometimes it was... really just whenever he started playing. I guess I'd say maybe I was like 6 or 7 was when I would start to go to the games. I was old enough. I remember from a very early age, very early.
And now he formed a very famous backcourt with Norman Van Leer, Storm and Norman, right?
Mm-hmm.
Were they close outside of the game as well?
Yes. He's someone that really, he meant a lot. And you know, Norm used to babysit me.
Oh,
when
wow.
I was a kid. Yeah. And he was a really, the opposite of my dad. He was so cool. Okay. You know, and he was always so neat. He had the fur coat and he was just so stylish and fun to be around. And, you know, so yeah, very well. They were very good friends. And shortly before he passed, he came out to Salt Lake City and, you know, he didn't do that all the time, but, you know, it was kind of, he passed shortly thereafter and it occurred to my dad that maybe he knew something that my dad did not, and he really wanted to say goodbye.
Wow.
And yeah. And so my dad was on the road at the time of his funeral. So I made sure that I went there, you know, to represent for my father. And I went with Tom Boerwinkle and his family.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And that, you know, yes, very much. So all of those guys, he always thought the world of. And they were just wonderful people.
Okay. So Storm and Norman Van Leer is your babysitter. Okay, so that's kind of cool, right? What are some of the other players that you interacted with that, you know, all of us are going to say, oh, wow. And it was like, to you, it's like, oh, that's Uncle So-and-so.
Tom Boerwinkle was our neighbor.
Oh, wow.
He lived right behind us in Northbrook. And, you know, our yards backed up to each other. And so Tom was, you know, one of my dad's closest friends in that basketball world. So yeah, he was definitely like an uncle to us. There was a funny joke. Tom had a couple dogs, and so he decided to build a fence around his yard. And he said, "Yeah, I'm going to build it to be about 6'6". Well, my dad was 6'5", and Tom was 6'11". So the joke was, you know, he could see us, but we couldn't see him. Yeah, so Tom was a great guy, wonderful with kids. His daughter and I are friends. Now his son Jeffrey studied theater at DePaul. Jeffrey did theater, and so that was, we kind of had a, you know, I was able to catch up with him. Sadly, it had to be at Tom's own funeral. But his daughter and I, we've taken, you know, had a couple of vacations together, and so yeah, I mean, he had a wonderful family. His wife Linda was, you know, great people. So yeah, Tom for the most part always, you know, he was always there.
Excellent. Now, did you travel at all with your dad on these trips, his plane trips?
I don't think anyone would want me traveling on any sort of business trip. I was a little too much to handle at the time, but I'm the youngest of three.
Okay.
So, but I wasn't allowed to travel until the playoffs.
Mm.
Yeah. So that was the only time. And I think that was when I was about maybe 25 or so. So I really wasn't allowed. Now, I mean, I would go with my mom, you know, to games. Now, we stayed back in Southern Illinois, and we had a place in Salt Lake City and in Southern Illinois. And my mom, I was in high school at the time. So, but there were times that I would go to games with her, you know, but I mean, as far as like go on the plane or anything like that, that was not until the playoffs.
Okay.
So, yeah. And then when he was the assistant coach of the 96 Olympic team, I got to do everything with him. And that was awesome, because I was, at that time I was single. So, you know, I could kind of do whatever, but there's an age about where you don't want your teenage daughter hanging around these people. So yeah, I was, and for the most part, we were pretty much told to be seen and not heard until we kind of figured out what this was all about and how to handle ourselves.
Now, when I have an uncle who is very much like a father to me. And when I told him that I was interviewing you about your father, he got very excited because your father, Jerry Sloan, was one of his huge role models when he was growing up, for what he did on the basketball court. And he and Norm had this reputation as this just hardcore defensive backcourt. And they were just tough guys. How did that translate at home? Was he a tough guy at home, or did we see a different side of him at home?
Well, you know, it's hard to not, I guess there was a difference in him as a player and a difference in him as a coach. As I can remember him as a player, he was always trying to keep his body conditioned and stuff like that. And, you know, he's a very funny person. You know, but he was not around a lot. My mom raised us, you know, but it was always great when we were able to have him around in the summer and things like that. Well, I mean, he always wanted us to be tough, you know, learn to take a hit, learn to get back up, you know, things like that in life, you know, but be fair about it, you know. Also, when it came time for us to, I started playing basketball last. I started watching my brother and sister. I was a gymnast and things like that as a kid. But when I decided to play, I'm a lot smaller than my brother and sister. And one of the things my dad had told me is, you're going to have to be tougher. You're going to have to learn to take the hits, because, you know, that was really all I ever learned as far as being a basketball player. I played in college for a year. But yeah, you had to learn to work. You know what I mean? You had to learn to do things for yourself. World wasn't going to be there to hand you everything either, you know, because it didn't for him. And so that was something that both he and my mom, of course, made sure that all three of us learned to do growing up.
Now, you mentioned your father's childhood, or, you know, what he came from, that, you know, he had what, 10, he was one of 10 siblings.
Yes, I believe 9. There's a lot to count.
Yeah. And from very humble beginnings. I mean, it was a farm town, wasn't it? Can you tell us a little bit about where he came from?
Yes. It's McLeansboro, Illinois, but actually McLeansboro is more like the town he would go to for things to go. He grew up way out in the country. He had to hitchhike a few miles. Well, he had to walk with him and his best friend to the nearest highway and hitch a ride into town.
Wow.
And probably with his brother too, because his next closest brother was about 3-4 years older. And so, yeah, he had to find his own way into town for the most part. So, you know, a lot of his siblings were often married and doing their own thing at the time. There's a big span between the oldest and the youngest.
Oh.
Yeah. And so, yeah, he you know, he didn't really live in McLeansboro. People call it Gobbler's Knob.
Okay.
And yeah, it's way out there. It's across from a church, a Braden Valley church, where my grandmother, my grandfather, some of my aunts and uncles are also buried. So he used to mow the lawn there. That was one of his jobs, but he lived way out there.
And I understand that small town upbringing kind of kept with him throughout his life. He had a hobby of restoring tractors. Is that right?
Well, yeah. Dick Motta once told him that he was a little too intense and that he needed a hobby. And, you know, because it was all that my dad never knew how to do was work, you know. And so he's like, you need to learn to do something. So he and my mom were into antiques. They had a booth in an antique store. And they were always at estate sales, my mother especially, estate sales, garage sales, auctions. And one of his favorite things to do was to buy old tractors and restore them. And he had quite a few. I want to say maybe 60.
Wow.
He had a bunch. And I was always fascinated by them. Terrified but fascinated. Now, some were actually used because he did have farmland, and that's what he did when he came home. You know, he would, you know, go on out to the fields and get on his tractor and work, you know. So there were always tractors and John Deere. It was John Deere.
Yeah, he was fond of John Deere caps, if I'm correct. Baseball hats. Yeah.
Oh yes. The trucker caps.
Yes. Not baseball. Trucker caps.
Yeah.
Now, working on the farm, what kind of farm? What did you guys grow? What did you farm?
Beans, grain, corn. You know, just the regular rotation.
Okay.
You know, yeah. Yeah.
Was it, I mean, part of the package, or did he just do it for fun? I mean, was that part of how he made a living, or did he just do it because he liked to farm?
I think in his mind, it was part of how to make a living, because that was how it all started for him.
Mm-hmm.
It was part of the package. It was just what he did, but it was one of those things that kept him busy, kept his mind occupied off of basketball, when he would do that. And he enjoyed the other people around him that came to work, that worked with him and did all that kind of stuff.
You're listening to It's Showtime with Ricky Lee on 101.5 Huntley Community Radio. You can always stream episodes at huntleyradio.com. Anyone who knows me knows that I live and breathe Chicago Bulls basketball. Jerry Sloan is regarded as one of the greatest Bulls players in history, and he was also an amazing coach for the Bulls and the Utah Jazz. Today, I'm talking with Holly Sloan about her father and what it was like for her growing up watching this amazing man operate in the NBA. But Holly, you kind of took a little different path. You did play a year of basketball in college, but you ended up pursuing kind of a theatrical interest. Tell us a little bit about what your interest is, what you do for thrills and fun.
Oh, I love theater. It's something that from a little girl, even before basketball and sports became a part of my life, I loved watching, just people entertain other people. And as being the youngest of three, you kind of had to, you know, make people know that you were there. And so that was sort of my first audience, was just anyone that was around that could not see me because they were all looking up. But when I first saw The Wizard of Oz, and I saw Judy Garland singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow. It kind of changed my life. And then my mother had me watch this movie called That's Entertainment. And I saw Gene Kelly doing Singing in the Rain and Donald O'Connor, I believe, doing Make 'em Laugh. And that's how you do it. You know, so I was always a little more outspoken probably than my brother and sister. I mean, as far as, you know, silly or, you know, theatrical. And as a gymnast, you kind of had to learn how to do that, you know. So I had to kind of take a little side path from that because I did a little bit of community theater in Northbrook. But when we moved to Southern Illinois after my dad was fired from the Bulls, we didn't really have community theater in Southern Illinois. So, you know, I stayed with the sports. I did, you know, track and field, which was probably my favorite, and I was most successful at sport, volleyball and basketball. But in high school, and at a small high school, it was easy to kind of do both. Okay. So I was, you know, vice president of the thespian club. And I was, you know, also I was a varsity athlete for 4 years. So, you know, it was kind of funny because I never really fit in. Because all my athlete friends called me artsy fartsy, and all my theater friends called me a dumb jock, you know. Right. So, you know, but it was always a lot of fun, and sometimes when you play sports, you throw a little bit of theatrics into it too.
Yeah, so, fake the injury, you know, sell the injury at least.
Kind of best of both worlds sometimes.
So you did community theater when you lived in Northbrook when you were younger. And then when you moved to Southern Illinois, they didn't have community theater, but you did high school theater.
Yes.
Okay. And so what did you gravitate to? More to the dramatic roles, the comedic roles, the musical theater, all of it?
We didn't have musical theater, sadly. But I think comedy for me was a natural fit. It was easier for me at that point, I didn't have any formal training. It was just basically me being up there, being me. And there was one time the director pulled me out of class. He's like, "Will you read this for me?" And it was basically this play about teen angst and what's going through your head. And he's like, "Yeah, here." You know, I don't know if that's a compliment or not, but comedy. Yeah, that was always something I loved doing. It was easy. But as when I got older, you know, in my 30s and, you know, started doing theater up here where I was really able to get back into it, I found myself really, I like the drama. I like the challenge of it. I like the ability to try to make an audience feel something. And, you know, but it's also hard to make them laugh. So it's, you know, I love the camaraderie of theater. That's why I do it. It's like being on a team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I take each cast member with me as I do each teammate I've ever had. I could probably tell you the name of every person on every team I've ever played on. You know, I enjoy that so much.
Now, was your father, I mean, he seems like a very stoic type of individual. Was he supportive of your theatrical career? Did he even understand it? I mean, some people with that kind of mindset don't translate.
No. Yeah. In fact, the first time, you know, he never understood that. And he wasn't around for that. He knew I enjoyed it. He didn't get it. You know, it's kind of funny, though. I found him in the drama club yearbook of his high school.
No way.
And I go, "Dad, what is this?" I go, "You're the drama club." He goes, "Yeah." I go, "Well, why? He goes, "Because all the girls were there and your mom was in it." I'm like, "Oh, okay. All right, I get that. That was really, because I've seen him do a couple of commercials and he was pretty good at that. But I was a theater minor in college because my parents would not allow me to major in that. I tried everything to let them, but it just wasn't going to happen. But the first show that I did was called Shooting Stars. And it was a story about a girls' basketball team in the Midwest. And when I saw that, I'm like, if something wasn't telling me, I was living in Indianapolis at the time. And so, of course, I basically, once again, stood there and was me. You know, I knew how to stand. I knew how to sit like a basketball, you know, so, and that, it was so much fun. But the cool thing about that was it was during the NBA lockout.
Oh.
Yeah. And so my parents came to visit me, and it was during Thanksgiving. Opening night was at Thanksgiving. And everyone was able to go, my brother, my sister, my mom, and my dad. So I thought, all right, now if there's anything that my dad would be able to understand, it was this. So at least, you know, it was really funny. I mean, and it was a very strange Thanksgiving because the parents came in, they stayed with me. My dad was cleaning my house. He was cooking food. And my mom and I were like, who is this man? You know, and it was really funny, but it was probably one of the best Thanksgivings I'd ever had. You know, my whole family was there. I was really proud of that. So I knew if my dad was able to understand any show I'd ever do,
this was it.
It would have been this one. And I actually had a smoke on stage. And when it came time to light that cigarette, I heard my mother gasp and I heard my father laugh. Something I didn't, you know, so that was kind of funny. And then the only other time he came to see me was up at PM&L Theater in Antioch. I played Commander Joe Galloway in A Few Good Men.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and that was a role I've waited for years. And I just had always wanted to do that. And I called my dad and I said, Dad, I got this part. I'm doing this part for A Few Good Men. And he was quiet for a minute and he goes, is that Jack? I said, Dad, yeah, that's Jack, Dad. He goes, well, I like Jack. Well, yeah, Jack used to sit by him and give him a hard time at Laker games. So, you know, so that was really neat. That was really neat. And, you know, at that time, it was shortly thereafter that we learned of his diagnosis of Parkinson's and dementia. So, you know, that was the only other time, you know, he had ever seen me perform. But if there were any two shows that I knew he would have, you know, that I was glad that he could see, it was that one, because I knew he liked the movie.
Yeah.
So he really enjoyed that one.
Now, your father was inducted into the NBA Hall of Fame. Very mm-hmm. proud, very big honor. He chose Charles Barkley to induct him. That wasn't one of his players. Is there some kind of connection there that the rest of us don't know?
Yes, he was my mother's favorite player.
Wow.
She loved Charles. And she always had. And so when it came time, he wanted, and he and Charles always got along, always. And it's a very strange friendship. You know, I don't, because he would always say, Charles is always on. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you know, what you see is what you get with him. I've been around him a couple times, and he, you know, just everything comes with him. And so that's why he wanted Charles to bring him up there, because my mother was such a fan and she loved him. And so, yeah, that was really neat.
Well, that is so special of your dad to do that for your mother.
Yeah.
And I mean,
yeah,
they had a magical relationship to begin with. As you alluded to, they met in high school. Is that correct?
Yes.
So was it kind of a storybook marriage?
Very much so. Well, I mean, yeah. My mother was beautiful. She was about 5'10", this long, dark, you know, darkish red hair and these big blue eyes. And at that time, I think my dad was like maybe 5'7" and wouldn't say boo to a goose. And he asked her out when they were, I don't know, like freshmen or something like that. And she basically laughed in his face.
Oh.
you know, because she dated older guys at the time, and, you know, because that wasn't cool. And then, like, the next year, he grew to be about 6'4", looked a lot like Elvis. And so he tried again, and I think she reevaluated her priorities. Yes. So, you know, and, you know, they dated all through high school, you know, with the ups and downs as normal, you know, as normal. And, when they went to, when graduated, my mother went to nurses training at Barnes Hospital in St. Louis, and my dad went to actually the University of Illinois. And he didn't like, it was too big for him. He hadn't been outside of Hamilton County, Illinois, except for a ball game his entire life. And it got to be, it was just too much. And so he said he's going to quit. And he said, well, I'm just going to come home and I'll work in the oil fields, you know, let's get married. And my mom said, no. You know, she says, you have other, I have goals that I need to achieve first. And so do you. And we both need to figure that out. And at that time, that was when Arab McCutcheon from the University of Evansville came and talked to my grandma. And I also believe he might have talked to my mom, mm-hmm. and said, this is something you need to do. And that's kind of, you know, so at that time, she finished her nurse's training. And then they were shortly married after that. They were married when my dad was in college.
Okay. And yeah. And then he was drafted into the NBA straight out of college.
Yes, yes, by the Baltimore Bullets.
Right, right, and then expansion draft went to the Chicago Bulls, and then
1 year later,
the rest is history.
Mm-hmm.
You've been listening to It's Showtime with Ricky Lee on 101.5 Huntley Community Radio. You can always stream our shows at huntleyradio.com. Today, my guest has been Holly Sloan. I've had an amazing time talking about the NBA and Chicago Bulls great Jerry Sloan. Holly is an accomplished actress, so be sure to keep a lookout for her upcoming performances. Holly, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for spending this time with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Ricky Lee.
Go Bulls!